Almost all public announcements and ceremonies centered on the figure of the paramount ruler. In the stelae that recount royal deeds, the only other characters are the king's family and other kings. Beginning in the late 9th or early 10th century AD, public monuments in Chichen Itza de-emphasized the king, changing from official narratives of regal actions to generalized non-textual images of religion, commerce, and war. In the new regime, economic power passed to a new class of people, merchants who exchanged salt, chocolate, and cotton from Chichen Itza for a host of goods from elsewhere in Mesoamerica. In previous centuries, trade focused on symbolic goods that directly engaged the king, such as jewelry for the royal family. During the drought, something like markets emerged. Dahlins calculated that the evaporation pans outside a coastal satellite of Chichen Itza would have produced at least 3,000 tons of salt for export every year. In return, the Maya took in tons of obsidian for blades, semi-precious stones for jewelry, volcanic ash for tempering pottery, and most important, maize. Like Japan, which exports consumer electronics and imports beef from the United States and wheat from Australia, Chichen Itza apparently traded its way through the drought. The contrast between North and South is striking and instructive. The obvious difference between them was the century and a half of large-scale warfare in the South. Both halves of the Maya realm depended on artificial landscapes that required constant attention. But only in the South did the Maya elite, entranced by visions of its own glory, take its hands off the switch. Drought indeed stressed the system, but the societal disintegration in the South was due not to surpassing inherent ecological limits, but the political failure to find solutions. In our day, the Soviet Union disintegrated after drought caused a series of bad harvests in the 1970s and 1980s, but nobody argues that climate ended communist rule. Similarly, one should grant the Maya the dignity of assigning them responsibility for their failures as well as their successes. Cahokia and the Maya, fire and maize, all exemplify the new view of indigenous impacts on the environment. When scholars first increased their estimates of Indians' ecological management, they met with considerable resistance, especially from ecologists and environmentalists. The disagreement, which has ramifying political implications, is encapsulated by Amazonia, the subject to which I will now turn. In recent years, a growing number of researchers has argued that Indian societies there had enormous environmental impacts. Like the landscapes of Cahokia and the Maya heartland, some anthropologists say, the great Amazon forest is also a cultural artifact, that is, an artificial object.